Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for the Bobby Eaton Show. Yeah. Giving you information you'll want to know. Speaking on issues affecting us all and music for the soul.
Yeah.
It's the Bobby Eaton Show.
Bobby.
It's the Bobby Eaton Show.
Bobby.
It's the Bobby Eaton Show.
Bobby.
It's the Bobby Eaton Show.
Hello, world. Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, or wherever you're at on the globe. Hey, and welcome to the Bobby Eaton Show. This is where we tell our stories our way, and that's the only way I know how to do it. And boy, do we have a great show tonight. We're talking about the Tulsa 1921 massacre, mass grave, where Kevin Ross is in the house, my buddy, my partner, he's in here, and we're going to be talking about it, and I'm going to be bringing him on in a little bit. And meanwhile, want to let you see what was going on. Today is Monday, and oh, yeah, we've got the Griffins. The Griffins play down at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center taking place this particular May 31st, the Griffins, Tulsa Performing Arts Center, Theater North, Dr. Rodney Clark and crew, in reference to a family that was in the massacre, 1921 massacre. So we're going to be going down there and supporting them. Tickets are only like, I think, $20, you know, in advance. And so you just go down there, support Theater North if you're in Tulsa, Oklahoma. If you're not, then, hey, maybe we can give you some information about the play. They were in here this past Saturday, so just kind of go on Facebook and look it up. Theater North, Tulsa. Also, let me see, Juice Radio Show. Every Thursday night, 6 p.m., it's the Juice Radio Show, headed up by Ramal, the Hometown Heat. And they come in here, young people doing radio their way. So we just have fun with the Juice. We're doing a fundraiser right now, and we're raising money, trying to take the Juice Radio Show to Atlanta, Georgia, taking them to CNN with Miss Sarah Sidner, you know, Sidner. Yeah, she's going to hook up all of that, and that's what's going to be going on. So we're doing a fundraiser to help, you know, help out them. All right, we're going to take a little break, and we're going to come right back. This is Tulsa's own Gap Band, and it goes like this. Thank you. Zone Gap Band here in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Hey, in the studio, I've got, I'm going to call him Dr. Kevin Ross. How we doing, bro?
Hey, you got it, my friend. You got
it. Is everything good with you?
Oh, man, this has been a blessing.
Been a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, been a minute.
It's been happening, man.
Yeah, man, a lot been going on,
oh,
man.
My
so,
gosh.
You know, before we get into the meat of everything, tell us, man, were you born and raised here in Tulsa?
Well, right? I was actually...
Not born and raised in Tulsa.
Yeah.
But, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was born in a military town called Clovis, New Mexico.
Okay, you're right. That's right.
And then, you know, of course, I was raised here, going to the elementary schools here. Then we, my family moved to Indiana. Then we returned back in the late 70s, and I finished up at Booker T. Washington High School.
That's good, man. We Hornets, man.
Oh, yeah.
Hornets for life.
Once a Hornet, always a Hornet.
Yeah. I had the privilege of being around a lot of the faculty and staff about last month or so, something like that.
Wow.
Had a little induction ceremony over there.
Oh, that's right. Congratulations being inducted to the Hall of Fame.
Well, thanks, my brother.
Wow.
You know. There you go. Hey, man, you know, I'm very humbled to have received, you know, that honor.
Yeah, that's cool.
You know, so it was a cool thing right there. But me, man, with you, man, you know what? I know a lot of photographers, man, and videographers. Mm-hmm. But, man, you got probably more footage than anybody I know in the city of Tulsa, man.
Well,
you know
you've
been collecting, huh?
Yeah, when this thing, especially within recent years, there's been a lot of magical moments that happen here in Tulsa, and I'm quick to grab a camera and capture it right then and there, because you may never know what might turn out later.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like I tell my young folks, I said, you know, always have a camera with you at all times. You may never know. There's something special, and a lot of special stuff been happening here in Tulsa in recent years.
Yeah, man, because I've never seen you too much without a camera.
Yeah.
Always got one, huh?
Either that or pull out this rusty cell phone
and capture it right there, huh?
Right then and there.
Right, man, and, you know, I just want to thank you, man, for capturing all of these memories of time, man. Your library goes back so far.
Yeah.
I mean, it goes back years.
Yeah.
You've been doing for how many, 35, 40 years?
It's been quite a while. I didn't start really capturing stuff until I saw the importance of the history of North Tulsa. And I think that really began when we were collecting the interviews for the riot survivors from the massacre for 1921. And hearing those stories that these survivors told to us, to the great... Eddie Faye Gates and I, we went to house
Eddie Faye
to house
Gates. Uh-huh.
And interviewed the testimonies of the survivors who, their testimonies were later, was a part of the record of the Tulsa Race Riot the Tulsa Race Riot Commission report, the official report. So their testimonies are written there. So a lot of those testimonies that we recorded are in the study, which is, you can get it online for free.
For free.
Uh-huh.
Wow, man. And that's some good recorded history, huh?
Oh, my gosh. The stories that they tell and a lot of the stories that they did tell, just basic life, you know, it's been housed within them for decades.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
this of an event that happened when they were 5 and 6 years of age.
About the riot, the massacre.
Riot. And not just the riot, but just mm-hmm. life in general of mm-hmm. Greenwood.
Greenwood, right.
Growing up in Greenwood.
Exactly.
And the teachers. Because mm-hmm. not only was recording testimony about the race riot itself, but also I was working on a historical marker for the Booker T, the original Booker T. Washington.
Down off of
Greenwood.
Greenwood,
which
mm-hmm.
is now completed and set mm-hmm. on the campus of OSU Tulsa.
Mm-hmm.
So I got a chance to talk to people who went there during those early days
mm-hmm.
at Booker T. Washington when it existed in
mm-hmm.
the historic Greenwood district, including my fave, Dr. John Hope Franklin, when he talked about his
mm-hmm.
days as being a youthful kid
mm-hmm.
On Greenwood in 1921. I think he graduated from Booker T. in 1931.
Mm-hmm.
And his father, the great B.C. Franklin, which a park down the street is named after.
Mm-hmm. You had a chance to meet Mr. Franklin, right?
Man, meet. It blew my mind when I was staying in Houston, Texas at the time.
Right.
I was contemplating moving back to Tulsa after the loss of my brother, my baby brother, Curtis.
Curtis, I remember Curtis.
Yeah,
he was a photographer, too.
He never left his camera.
He was feminine. I used to be Curtis feminine, everything.
Yeah, he got
yeah.
it. And so after his death, I was, you know, getting kind of homesick anyway. And a friend of mine was telling me about there's a TV show on PBS. You need to check out. They're talking about your hometown. And so when I tuned in, it was Colin Fields going back to T-Town.
Oh, where was it?
Yeah.
She had a show?
No, it was a documentary called
mm-hmm.
Going Back to T-Town.
Okay.
And a lot of people that was in that film, which included Jim Goodwin and Homer Johnson, all grew up with them.
Mm-hmm.
And then they showed John Hope Franklin, and they said, I know this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And when I finally made it back home to Tulsa, I got a chance to speak with him 101. He said, wait a minute, your name is Ross? I said, what's your daddy's name?
Yeah, right.
And I said, Don Ross. State Representative Don Ross. I said, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, I've been knowing you ever since you were 5 years old.
What an honor.
And that began our relationship from that point.
Yeah. And speaking of your father, man, he did a lot of work here in North Tulsa,
oh,
man,
yeah.
in the community. He was a state
yeah.
representative. He was a civil rights activist, him
oh,
and my pops
oh,
and all
my
of them.
Gosh.
Man, if the walls could talk.
Ooh, wait, the things they could tell.
Oh, my goodness.
I wish they can tell us now.
Yeah, really, man. And, you know, they kind of some of the, I say, the last of the soldiers, man, those
right,
of that
right.
era.
Right.
You know, the civil rights movement, when we had different programs, man, the Model Cities program,
right.
Tag Agency, Urban League, NAACP, SCLC,
Urban Removal.
Yeah. Yeah, we had that too.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
that's just what it is. They should
yeah.
change it, put that name on, Removal.
Yeah, scratch that
know?
Renewal, because
mm-hmm.
the only thing it did was renewal.
That's what it did.
Wounds.
That's what it did, man, you know. But, you know, we've lost a lot of those programs and those black organizations
mm-hmm.
that we could go to in the community, like when the Urban League was open and
yeah.
you could go over there and all of these different
goodness.
Connections
yeah.
and different things
yeah.
would take place.
And I think the passing of Shirley Scoggins
here
know,
recently, yeah.
recently, you know, it just brought back a flood of memories of those days at the Urban League, singing with the Ghetto Youth Choir.
Oh, man.
Lloyd Wiley on.
Oh, yeah.
And
I was in the band.
Yeah.
You know, me and Bobby Giles and
wow.
them. Yeah.
I remember those
oh,
days.
Oh, yeah.
I remember the shingling, you know, those bets.
Little
bell
bottom pants.
Probably the afro.
Yeah.
Plus,
girl had that
afro. It was a powerful movement. You know, a recent just returned from Kent State University.
Okay, up in Ohio.
Ohio,
mm-hmm.
which, oh my gosh, I forgot about this time. I had to be 8 years old, but May 4th, 1970, that's when students were
shot by
the National Guard.
Right, exactly.
And, yeah, four students died, and I think nine were injured.
Mm-hmm.
And And I was,
that was a big deal, man.
That, yo, that was a major big deal.
They call it the Kent State Murders, right?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, and to this day, every year they commemorate that event, and they get some pushback from some people in the community, but each year they push. And this past May 4th, I was down as a keynote speaker for their 49th commemoration.
Oh, man, I commend you on
big.
That.
Oh, man, it was, I mean, to be on the same campus when Bob wrote the articles.
Yeah, I remember
who,
him.
Yeah, who took down Richard Nixon by the article about the Watergate. You know, I'm right
there with him.
With him. I mean, we had thousands people there, thousands of people there. I'm like, and I'm a keynote at the VAT.
You had to speak, huh?
Yeah. And
how did they find you?
Well, they were looking at some of the videos that
you had did
that had been in the past, and a couple of them were the latest one, which was on Vox Media. Why is a city searching for mass graves? Which went viral,
right?
Within the week, it like went over a million hits on YouTube. And then I was with the
say it one more time. What's the name of it?
Is it Why Is a U.S. City Searching for Mass Graves?
Oh. Yeah.
You can just search Tulsa mass graves, they'll pull it right up.
Right.
And before then, I worked with a group from the Netherlands who did a similar program about the mass graves, which aired over in Netherlands, Germany,
and other parts of the world.
Yeah, about 200 million viewership over there, and it went viral over there.
That is great. Fantastic.
Yeah. And then I did one a couple of years ago called Hate Crimes in the Heartland, which focus on the race riot.
I saw that one.
Yeah, so that's one of my favorites. And
yeah, well, now it's 2019 and we still got stuff going on, man.
Yeah.
Still struggling, still going and still fighting in the fight for equalization and for rights and discovering some new things that some of us have known for a long time, and especially talking about Greenwood, you know, per se. And how do you feel today, man, about Greenwood as it stands right now?
As it stands right now and the plans for it, I'm very optimistic. But then again, I grew up in a family where we watch everybody and trust no one. Because everybody has ulterior motive, and quite sure, you know, everybody should. But why all the interest now? And so, but I'm excited for some of the plans, as long as that does not erase one entity. I love the ideas of expanding the Greenwood culture. I love what's going on over at Vernon AME.
Yeah, the expansion of building that on site and stuff. Now, I heard there were some meetings held, or a meeting held, and they have about $8 million or something like that.
It's more than that.
Is it more than $8
million? Yeah.
$10 million, maybe?
Well, I just learned...
Something for development of the community, Tulsa community, or is it just Greenwood?
Well, no, the monies that I know about is some... funding that's going to expand the Greenwood Culture Center as well as the
I heard about that development taking place.
That. And I think here recently, I think $1.5 million from the state is going towards that effort, along with the private funding, which is close to $10 million. And I think...
it's going to private funding?
The private funding is
it like for community, like people with businesses, or
that I don't know. From my understanding from the last meeting I went to, they basically talk about brick and mortar.
Yeah, building buildings or something.
Buildings. So they have anything as far as like enterprise zones
or redeveloping an existing.
Yeah, I
didn't hear none of that.
None of that.
Because we've got a lot of vacancies.
Trust me,
here in North Tulsa, that could be developed and turned into. Just a little funding as well. And they, it would be so nice if they could do some Greenwood and do some community.
And
kind of mix it up a little bit You know, and to help some of those good, honest African-American black businesses who are really trying to do something.
It's time for us to get our shot.
Our shot.
You know, and others have been able to do theirs. And, you know, so... we've been standing in line much too long. No, so
we're still standing in line.
And we're going to be there.
We're going to be in line.
If we don't open now, up our mouths. And so,
I got you. You know, so, and some of my concerns when it comes to us, man, is our churches. Yeah. And that's a whole nother conversation about them uniting, getting together, and getting out in these streets. And, you know, and putting something in, some some development into the community, you know.
Man, yeah.
You know, like back in the day, we had people such as you know, Chappelle
and
Reverend Webb and Ben Hill, B.S. Roberts.
Yeah.
Yeah, and all of them were here.
And they worked as
you
a
know,
team.
They, worked, they were you could put your hands on them.
Right.
They
right,
were you
right.
know, put on hands, you could put your hands on these people.
Right.
And it was just great to be able to have them as leaders in the community running their churches and their churches are out in the field.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the old saying is that the harvest plentiful, but the laborers are few. And it'd be so lovely to see these churches to get connected on a common cause. Like, you know, I always had that phrase, no pennies past plying when it comes to, you know, when
no
we get
pennies
out,
past plying.
Yeah, no pennies past plying. I know we got business down on Greenwood, but the statement is that we need, you know, like restaurants over here.
Man, we need restaurants. That would, that's what would really bring people back down on Greenwood.
Yeah.
It's some kind of nightlife.
Nightlife.
We don't have no nightlife down there.
Yeah, I mean, everything on nightlife would be is doing baseball season, but
it was vague. That's for them.
It's light night.
And I'm going to say it's light night. It ain't black night. It's light night. Now, I think you got the Black Wall Street Gallery down on the corner and Rico trying to do some stuff.
Yeah.
Down to bring people back into the community, you know, and then we just need some restaurants and stuff, places to eat and stuff.
The thing that Rico is doing, some things that I have been saying all along, I said, well, so they got the baseball park down there and got fireworks going on during the weekends. Hey, we need to be, we don't necessarily have to go to the baseball game, but we can hang out down on Greenwood.
We can be down on Greenwood.
We better have something down there for
us to hang out.
Yeah, hang out, right?
Right. You know,
that's all Rico's doing. That,
yeah, he's been. I got some speakers down there and some wine tasting takes place, some cheese and crackers.
It's a moment of gathering
down on Greenwood. Yeah. You know, my dad always says, man, when you go down Greenwood, you need to see ghosts. You know, walking. you need to see ghosts of the ancestors, man, walking around up in there. You know what I mean? You should have some kind of feeling or something.
Yeah.
If you connect it, you should know, you know, and I say, wow, that's so true.
Yeah.
You know, so true. We got to take it back.
Yeah. You know, I wish that we as Tulsans were as committed in commemoration what happened, even though you hear those people say, oh, I want you to forget about it. Oh, that's dead issue.
That was the end.
Let it go. We try to think of a new Tulsa. I said, no, we can't think about a new Tulsa until we go back and deal with the past of old Tulsa, because those
doors
are still open. You know, like I said, going back to Kent University, how they commemorated the lives of those people that were injured and killed down on that campus, and how they had for an hour and a half a silent candlelight vigil walk through the campus and around the borders.
For an hour and a half?
For an hour and a half.
In silence?
In silence. I mean, it was just so powerful. And then we ended up, and this started at midnight, you know.
Wow.
And this went on till 5 o'clock in the morning, where people stood in the places of the people who were shot and killed. Well, one person stood in a place holding a candlelight until the sun came up. That was such
That's
a
powerful.
And we can do that here in Tulsa.
We need to do that here. We need to honor our ancestors, man, who went through so much.
Yeah.
So we can be able to be where we at right now today.
Exactly. We don't have to wait until Black History Month or Juneteenth or June 1st. I'm still trying to play catch up.
You know,
on
I tell everybody, I say, I really don't believe in just Black History Month. I think it's American history and it's been here. So every month is Black History Month for me.
Exactly.
You know,
because
there's so much that's untold.
Yes.
Now, let me ask you this. There have been several documentaries about Black Wall Street.
Yes.
What do you think about them? Because it's been a lot of white people have done documentaries about the massacre. How do you feel? Do you think there's truth to these documentaries, or do you think some of them are leaving a lot of stuff out?
Well, I think some of them, they had the full-fledged funding to do a good documentary. Those have been above board. But you had some of the, you know, if you just search for Tulsa Race Riot, you pull up any Joe Blow's documentary, and they'll tend to, if you don't know no better, they'll tend to go off the beaten path,
mm-hmm.
you know, and say all kinds of things we know not true. Like one I heard talking about, and there were banks on Greenwood. I said, no, it wasn't any banks.
Banks.
You know, it had no bank.
No.
Matter of fact, black folks didn't really believe in banks. They kept their money at home.
In a coffee can.
Coffee can.
Up under the mattress.
And, in, you know, in the walls.
Right, in the walls.
Yeah.
I already know. They had a little crocus sack or something. You know?
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, they did have a savings alarm in one of the hotels, you know, one of the room houses.
Because back in those days and times, if you put your money in a white bank, they would come up with all kind of stipulations and taxes and all that and tell you owe this and you owe that.
Right.
And,
no money.
And just take your money.
Yeah. Take your money.
That's why we didn't have those banks like
right.
that.
It was, you know, it was an issue of trust. And,
trust.
You know,
mm-hmm.
And so there were black folks that did do business in downtown Tulsa, the Tulsa banks. But I'm not sure how where they fared after the riot, because I knew during that time that after the riot, there was a conspiracy to prevent blacks from rebuilding. So the banks would not give out loans.
Mm-hmm.
The lumber company and the brick companies
would
refused
not.
To sell to blacks. And that's when John Hope Franklin's father, B.C. Franklin, after the city of Tulsa was creating all these laws saying you cannot build on scorching lands. You know, they made
right,
that a
exactly.
law.
Burnt land,
yeah,
burnt stuff.
Yeah, you cannot build.
But they rebuilt.
Yeah, because B.C. Frank said, no, build with orange creatures to be happy. Build, because what they did was created a wrongful law, and he took the city and the powers all the way to the Supreme Court and won.
Mm-hmm.
And because courts stated that what Tulsa did was wrong.
It was a massacre, man.
Yeah, yeah.
It really was. I mean, we did start off fighting back.
Yeah.
But it got to the point we were out overpowered.
Yeah.
And they just came in. Because, see, back in those days, blacks were flourishing, man.
Oh, my God.
China and chandeliers and
grand pianos.
Pianos in the home. Some even blacks had plumbing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and airplanes.
Yeah.
And
there were nice homes on Greenwood.
Exactly. Nice homes.
You had your hood there, but you had some nice affluence houses.
Mm-hmm.
You had businesses in the Greenwood district. Overlap, you know, redundant, you know,
right.
A number of grocery stores in the area.
You didn't have to worry about no grocery.
No.
Stuff like that. People took pride in what they were about and what they had.
Right.
And then when it was all destroyed, then that made it a whole other thing.
Yeah. And but luckily for us, and through that period, right after the riot, that became the Depression era. But I don't think Greenwood really was very hurt. I don't think they were hurt by the Depression era. Because they came roaring back by 1929, pretty much a Greenwood that was destroyed.
Kind of rebuilt.
It rebuilt it and flourished bigger and better.
Yeah. It came back bigger and better.
Yeah.
And see, that's some of the part about the massacre that we don't talk about, how it came back and it was even better than what it was before.
Yeah.
You know, we don't ever really talk about that part of it.
Yeah, the resilience of it.
Exactly.
We're going to make it bigger and better. And the Mount Zion Church, which was destroyed in the riot, and they had a new note. They had a note on the up building that was torn down, which was a couple of months old.
And rebuilt that one up.
Yeah, and paid off both of them at the same time, the old bill and the new bill.
Mm-hmm.
And the Burning Man,
it was restored.
I mean, and you had a lot of church. I remember interviewing one of the riot survivors, Joy, what's her name? McCondishy.
Joy McCondishy?
Well, her grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember her name, forgive me. But
Her grandmother, Miss McCondishy.
Yeah, Miss McCondishy.
Mm-hmm.
She talked about, I believe it might have been a church near, or it might be Paradise Church, how the rioters. How the rioters tried to set the church afire.
Mm-hmm.
And every time that they tried to set the place afire, the fire just extinguished itself out.
Okay.
And for years, they would leave that scorched wall in place as a reminder of what happened on that day.
On that day, huh?
1921.
Wow.
So, yeah.
That's crazy, man, because a lot of that took place, and it's so much, you guys, if you're listening, do your research about the 1921 massacre. You know, you can get some stuff off of YouTube. You can get some stuff in your libraries, and it's a lot of history right there, and you know, just do the research.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, because and then there's a lot of stories that haven't been told.
Right.
About
right.
that massacre. That my right. daddy was telling me some stories because my grandfather was down there doing doing the riot, the massacre.
Mm-hmm.
And he was 1921. He was about 23 years old.
Mm-hmm.
He was down there with shining shoes,
right, right,
and stuff like that. So many people's parents and relatives were involved in the massacre,
mm-hmm.
you know, down there. So
yeah, my great grandfather Isaac
mm-hmm.
Evett, he had a Jew joint down on Greenwood.
Mm-hmm.
It's right in vicinity where you know where the Black Wall Street mural is,
mm-hmm.
the overpass,
the mural.
Yeah, it's right there. If you look at those plaques, you'll see one
mm-hmm.
of the plaques that said Ike Evett's Zulu Lounge.
Exactly.
Which was right next to the Stratford Hotel
mm-hmm.
that was right there on Greenwood.
Mm-hmm.
And they destroyed his facility, and
mm-hmm.
and he was not able to rebuild.
Okay.
But he left the state of Oklahoma angry for what was taken. His land was taken away from him.
Mm-hmm.
So... And I just recently found out information about his role during the time of the riot, because he was one of those ones that demanded the release
mm-hmm.
of Dick Rowland that was in jail after dealing with Sarah Page.
Mm-hmm. Sarah Page, right.
In the elevator incident. And he's also was the ones who, one of the ones who went down to the courthouse afterwards over with, and he, along with some other Black folks, was cited as far as being a part to initiate the riot. They was trying to blame the riot on the Black folk.
They were.
Yeah. And it was, you know, y'all the reason why y'all own part of town got tore up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how bad. If you look at the pages of the history on the
mm-hmm.
legal system at that time,
mm-hmm.
when
mm-hmm.
you got the judge, you got the jury,
mm-hmm.
you got the attorneys, all of them on the Klan road, what chance did you think that you have in 1921?
Mm-hmm.
Dealing with that kind of a system where everything is against you, especially if you're trying
mm-hmm.
to make a thing or trying to make an issue
out of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, man. That is, I was just down there. Let's see, a few days ago, I
mm-hmm.
go down there periodically and, was hanging out and stuff like that. And, you know, my conclusion is down there right now, is just what you said earlier. We need some type of nightlife down there,
right?
To bring us down there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because we don't have nothing to do down there,
right?
You know, and that's, we know some of us. The history is starting to pop up now.
Oh yeah.
People are talking now.
Oh,
we
yeah.
now
yeah.
we've got this centennial coming about.
Mm-hmm.
We got what? We off maybe 2 years, maybe.
Yeah.
Something like
yeah.
that.
We less than 2 years.
Less
down.
Than 2 years
yeah.
down.
Oh.
And the centennial is going to bring about people from all over this country.
Right.
Are
right.
going to national activists and leaders
right.
and I'm going to say the Sharptons and Jesse
yeah.
Jacksons. And
yeah.
Everybody's going to come
yeah.
to
yeah.
Black Wall Street on Greenwood. Now we're going to have some things and something for them to do.
Yeah,
not only
to do, but to have, you know,
mm-hmm.
there's very few places. Matter of fact, I'm going to take it back. I don't know no places where you have like a little token of a souvenir or something that you can have take
you know,
back,
right.
you know, and a t-shirt or two. And there's some brothers that's trying to do t-shirts.
Yeah, I know
yeah.
a few of those. Yeah.
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You better stock up because
mm-hmm. it's going to be needed. You know what we really need down there is like a gift shop.
Right.
You know, the where they can come into and they can see all the
mm-hmm.
history.
Mm-hmm.
They can buy the t-shirts.
Right.
They can buy the cups, the ink pens, the pencils,
right.
or whatever memorabilia that they can get. We
right.
need that. So, therefore, they can take those things back with them.
Back.
The books
yeah.
and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
and, you know, DVDs and all of that,
all
kind,
that
of stuff.
Kind of stuff. You know, because a lot of stuff, too, you know, people looking for that experience, you know, walking those grounds. Like, I heard so many times when people from out of town, when they come and walk those grounds of Greenwood,
mm-hmm.
and they feel that hollow ground
mm-hmm. feeling
experience.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the same thing I felt when I was down there at Kent State. You know,
felt that, huh?
I felt like, wow, that's
a
surge. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now you know what happened here. So
mm-hmm.
it was like very powerful. So we here in Tulsa, as we move towards 2021, we need to have mechanisms in place to
mm-hmm.
not only feed
mm-hmm.
the people with that kind of a knowledge and have
right.
trinkets and stuff, but also had them to feel that that experience. You know, I know some groups is starting up doing tours and stuff like that. We'll need more of them because it's going to be a lot of people want to come and to experience.
Yeah, they are. They're going to want to see the history,
mm-hmm.
you know, and a lot of times I just believe that if we tell the history correctly, you know, if we tell the truth
right.
and tell it the right way,
right.
that people will get a better understanding of what took place,
right.
you know, down there. And it's historical, man.
Yeah.
It's big. It's big news.
Well, you know, everybody pretty much, you know, even documentaries and news companies, they pretty much got the story right on the money, except there's a big absence after the riot and the aftermath of the riot. And from Greenwood, from that point, it's like, it's just like a void.
Yeah, after the riot.
After the riot. Nobody said nothing, you know.
Even
though it was a push by the county commissioners and city officials, including Tate Brady, who was on the commission. You know, first they were talking about reparations for the survivors, and then they fired that crew, and they brought in Tate Brady and his cronies, and they were talking about, what we're going to do instead is push the Negro settlement further to the north and to the east, because we all want this land
up in here,
and we can buy this land pennies off the dollar of the scorched land, and these black people, they will sell it. They will sell because they want to get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they did. They set up inside the Booker T. Washington
School. And Tate Brady was the head of the Klan, wasn't he?
Oh, my God.
Man, goodness, man, you know.
But he wasn't the only one. It was some other people that was involved right there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, funny that you said, you talk about Tate Brady, we think about the heroes that this city had put names on city property to give them honor, like of course the Brady District, thank
mm-hmm.
goodness that the art district changed that name,
Brady Theater, and all of that. They changed it. Brady, I thought they took it down.
Oh great!
Yeah, they took this. Don't say Brady Theater no more.
Wow!
I went by there the other day and I said, don't say Brady Theater. I heard they were changing it to
Tulsa Theater or something
Tulsa
like that.
Civic Theater or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had talked to Peter Mayo, who's the owner.
He owns that building.
Yeah,
right?
And I remember we talked about this years ago when we was protesting the issue about Brady name to be taken down off the city streets. And he was like, is my theater part of anything bad that happens? Man,
he didn't even know, huh?
Yeah, I mean, that's where they interned. That they made your theater into a prison camp.
Yeah, right.
And I said, and it was rumored, now I don't have any facts, mm-hmm. it was rumored that they buried some of the people that were dead in the basement of your theater.
Right.
And so, well, I'm contemplating this years ago. I'm contemplating about changing the name. So I'm glad that
he did acknowledge
that's,
that.
That's,
huh?
That's a good thing. That's a
good
thing.
A good,
but here's some other places. One of the places that the city is going to investigate as far as mass graves is New Block Park.
New Block Park, yeah.
That's off of Charles Page, which that's another story. Off of Charles Page Boulevard, just on the west side of downtown Tulsa.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful park. It was named after the mayor, H.F. New Block, who became the mayor after 1921. They didn't like the current mayor because he messed up the aftermath of
massacre.
The massacre.
Mm-hmm.
And so they brought in this guy named H.F. New Block. This not only was he affiliated with all kinds of real estate schemes and political affiliations,
mm-hmm.
this guy was also listed. His name is listed in his own handwriting on the Klan Rolls. Now we had a park name
on the Klan Roll.
He's on the Klan Roll, mayor of Tulsa. We need to change that name, people. There's another park.
He's still down.
Yeah. There's another park called Whiteside. You know?
Whiteside Park?
Yeah, he's on the plan too. He was on the list too. The same list. So when people start telling me, especially you know white people, say, why don't you just get over it? Let it go. Just let it go.
They'll say that in a minute.
I said, wait a minute.
I let it go
when you let those names go.
Yeah,
there's
right. You're not gonna let your history go.
Yeah.
You're not gonna let it go.
Yeah, one person told me and said, you need to stop trying to change our history.
They told you that?
Yeah. And I replied, we're not trying to change the history. We just want the truth added.
Right.
That's all.
Right. And we need correction.
Yeah.
So you can correct things. If when you done made wrong, you can correct things.
Right.
You can change signage and all that kind of stuff. And you know, because
right.
we have a new generation growing up.
Right.
You know, and we don't want them to be brainwashed.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know, they're thinking it's okay to be here.
yeah.
when it ain't okay
yeah,
and it never
okay.
was okay.
Yeah.
You know, and so.
Yeah. For a young state in 1907, his first law was a Jim Crow law. I mean, it made it legal to hate people of color.
Exactly.
That's your first law. And everything went downhill since.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to build it. You know, that law stayed into existence until 1964 when Martin Luther King pushed for the Civil Rights Act.
Mm-hmm.
Then when it passed, all bets was off.
Yeah.
The Jim Crow law. But all this time, these guys
had to endure that.
Yeah, had to endure that. And they, So it was a wonder. It was a wonder why the riot would occur. You know, you set the stage for it to happen.
They did set the stage, and it didn't turn out nice.
No.
You know, it didn't turn out nice at all. I mean, so many people suffered.
Mm.
Now, after the massacre, there were a bunch of bodies displaced everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, and it may be some, I think, up under Driller Stadium and stuff as well, like anywhere, even on Greenwood, even everywhere.
Yeah.
But now I heard an abundance of bodies were put in the Oakland Cemetery, right?
Yes, yes.
Tell us a little bit about it. Now, I saw you on TV,
and
they did a story about the investigation, and I assume that Mayor Bynum is in on investigating this as well.
Right.
So
right.
Tell us about how did this all come about to resurrect, you know, this new finding?
Well, to talk about that is to go way back when the need to look for the dead goes back to the creation of the Race Riot Commission to study the Tulsa Race Riot, which was a state commission. And one of the things they said in there, you know, based on the knowledge that they had collected over the years and the hearsays and the rumor mills, they sought to look out for those areas and to find truth in it. And they did go in search of mass graves, like in Oakland, Oakland Cemetery, which is off 11th Street along the Route 66 path. They did go to Booker T. Washington Cemetery, which is out there on 91st. It's called Rolling Oaks Cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
They did go to New Block Park, where each area, those areas that they went to, they had some abnormalities in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had some of the stronger readings in Oakland.
In Oakland Cemetery.
Oakland Cemetery.
Huh? Uh-huh.
And there was a gentleman, a white gentleman by the name of Clyde Eddy. Clyde Eddy. He was a white gentleman. He said that when he was 10 years old,
okay,
he and his cousin were walking along 11th Street and saw these men digging in the graveyard. And at that time, it wasn't a fence there. So they just walked upon the lawn of Oakland, and they saw these giant crates spread it out throughout the area. And so he went in inside, and he lifted up the top of one of the crates, and he saw the bodies of about five or four black men inside, just thrown inside this box.
These boxes, huh?
Yeah. And then he went to another box, two of them that he and his cousin looked inside and saw more bodies in these boxes. And they kept looking to boxes until they was eventually kicked out of there by one of the grave diggers. And so that was one of those stories that nobody
knew. He was a little boy.
He was at 10 years old.
10 years old, huh?
Yeah. And so
he actually saw that.
He saw that. And we never knew that story until the Race Riot Commission
started investigating.
And we had a lot of people that would come forth and tell those stories about the mass graves. We got a city council person, how she talked about how her father watched bodies being thrown in the Arkansas River by the truckload. And meantime, while the bodies are being thrown in the Arkansas River, our black folks were in the internment camps, like at Brady Theater. They were Monulty Park, which is located right where Home Depot is downtown. The Tulsa Fairgrounds out there. So you had all the black folks all in these internment camps while they were trying to get rid of all these bodies.
Right.
And it was a certain urgency to get this done because disease could quickly invade the city. So they had to get rid of those bodies.
They had to get rid of them. They're still there. They're there.
They didn't move. They've been especially.
So you, do you think they're gonna excavate those? I mean, bring those bodies. They're gonna dig it up.
Well, there's a new process that they're gonna which some of the techniques are done now with ground penetrating radar, which it can actually see no matter how deep the hole is, or
right.
if it's covered with concrete or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They are able to look way below the ground and see exactly what's there
without having to bring bodies up. Huh?
Yeah, yeah. But once they get a hit, they go get them. And the wish is at this point is that once the bodies are located, doing a proper investigation as far as doing DNA matching, just
for families and stuff like that, to see if it's their loved ones.
A lot of people don't know, folks. I'm Otis Clark, a ride survivor. He died when he was, I think he was 109 back in the early 2000s.
Man.
He talked about how his stepfather, they never saw his stepfather ever again,
mm-hmm.
after the ride, and it's always the one that, or whatever happened to so-and-so, and nobody really knew, because they just gone, disappeared.
Just disappeared.
Yeah.
Well, I think out of due respect, it needs to be investigated and to get some closure on people's families, man. Such a disturbance, man.
Right.
It kind of bothers me to think that I may have some relatives over there or anywhere that were never discovered. I didn't know,
We all boils down to this, I was cautioned not to say that, make this statement, but I'm going to say it anyway. I said, if this was a Jewish grave, it would have been hell to get paid.
Oh, man.
It would have been hell to be. If it was a Native American graveyard and they building stuff on top of it, it would be hell to pay. But when a developer comes in and building his houses on top of a black cemetery,
mm-hmm.
nobody said nothing about it. Then developers say, hell, let's get paid.
And
that's
what
it is.
And that's what happened.
Exactly.
Huh?
When I broke the story in 2004 about the Booker T. Washington Cemetery out there on 91st Street,
mm-hmm.
There was builders out there. They built a whole community's $300,000 houses
mm-hmm.
sitting on top of what we know were graves. They were graves all over the place, even in the areas that wasn't marked as a grave. They still
mm-hmm.
had bodies out there. And they still did it. And one of my discouragements, I went there last month with
mm-hmm.
Fox 23 in their investigation,
mm-hmm.
and that same graveyard, which I photographed and documented heavily over the years, when I went out there for the first time in about 4 years and see that some of the grave markers that were there that I knew and I photographed
right.
are no longer there. And I'm like,
they removed them?
They removed them. Some of them had names on them. I'm saying, no, I'm glad I took a picture of this.
Yeah.
And so again, if this was a Native American, it was a Jew, it would have been hell to get paid. And
mm-hmm.
that bothers me now. So with this launching of this investigation, I'm hoping that that the city and the county, all those involved, will secure these areas
mm-hmm.
And keep people from out of there. Because right now, people are taking stuff out of there like souvenirs.
They're taking route right now, huh?
Right now. Mm. At least the one on 91st Street. Now, there are other areas of the city that people are now saying that bodies are buried.
What are the other areas,
Well, some of them said in Crown Hill. Then we need to talk about that.
Oh,
area.
Yeah. I was today.
Yeah. Crown Hill. There's some places outside the state. Outside Tulsa, I think it's Purcell, Oklahoma.
Purcell.
This guy who used to be the sheriff there was talking about
mm-hmm.
the mass graves out there that he knew exactly. Mm-hmm. But before we can get to him, he died in a car accident just a couple of months early before we contacted him.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd be amazed. It goes back to an old movie that I love called Do the Right Thing with Spike Lee and Ozzie Davis is quoting
right.
him saying,
exactly.
Those who know won't tell,
mm-hmm.
and those who would tell don't know.
Yeah, ain't that the truth?
And I'm here. What I know, I'm going to tell everybody.
You're going to tell everybody. Right. Yeah. Okay, we're going to go to the phone line. We're going to call in. Let's see who we have right here. Here it goes. 314-81. You're on the Bobby Eaton Show.
How you doing, Bobby?
Pretty good.
It's Pianchi.
Oh, hey, Pianchi, how you doing? You're calling from St. Louis, right?
I'm calling from the Midwest, not exactly. But you know what this reminds me of?
Yes.
Right now, you're saying you have developed this building on
mm-hmm.
Graves.
Mm-hmm.
This reminds me of the movie Poltergeist. Remember that?
Yeah, exactly. Man. How could we forget?
Yeah.
Yes. Now, who would want to live in a house that was built under those type of circumstances? I wonder if the people mm-hmm. that's buying would know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, the people, they don't know, you know, and I don't see how you could not know, because that area out there on 91st is nothing but a community of different cemeteries. You got Rangers Grove Cemetery, you got Calvary Catholic Cemetery, which a lot of Black Catholics are buried in. You got the Anglican Church Cemetery right next to the Rolling Oak Cemetery, which was formerly known as the Booker T. Washington Cemetery. So you have a whole area of nothing but
cemetery.
So they
is all
are
out
intertwined.
There.
So I wouldn't want to stay out there if you're a believer, like
getting some
visitors.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that should be some sort of legislation where it's required that people know exactly what this area was previous to build
uh-huh.
my house on that you're getting ready to
yeah.
buy. Anyway, yeah. I'll hang up and continue to listen, Bobby. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you for calling, Pianchi, okay?
You know, he made a good
all
point.
Right. He made
there.
A great – well, he calls all the time. He's
yeah.
one of the listeners and stuff like that. He comments on a lot of stuff. Yeah,
because, yeah, you know, I don't think the people who buy those homes never knew that the area was, you know.
I didn't think you could actually – build homes on top of graves. They didn't know. They
didn't
know nothing about it.
You know, when I went
right.
out there, my first initial, I wrote an article on Oakland Eagle back in 2004 called South Tulsa Tales from the Crypt, Part 1. And
that sounds like you. Tales from the Crypt, Part 1.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.